Hello and welcome to The Sound Off, a podcast where school safety takes center stage. My name is Michelle Gay, and I'm co-founder and executive director of Safe and Sound Schools. We're committed to protecting every school and every student every day. In today's episode, we explore intertwined narratives of personal bravery, resilience, and dedication to public service. Before we dive into our conversation, I'd like to extend my gratitude to our sponsors for their unwavering support. This season of The Sound Off is made possible by the Door Security and Safety Foundation, which emphasizes the essential role of certified professionals in ensuring safe and secure building entrances. To learn more and to find an expert, visit www.doorsecuritysafety.org. Joining me today are AJ and Madalena DeAndrea, a remarkable father-daughter duo. AJ, a veteran law enforcement officer with extensive experience in crisis response, and Madalena, a survivor with an inspiring story of courage and empowerment, will share their unique perspectives. Listen in as we explore their personal journeys of facing adversity, the legacy of bravery they've built, and the profound impact of their experiences on school and community safety. So joining me today at The Sound Off, Madalena and AJ DeAndrea. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you.
Well, I warned you that I would be asking you guys a very goofy question to start off. We on The Sound Off cover some pretty weighty topics, and we will today. We always do. But we're all humans, and we get through this work together and with a bit of humor. And sometimes it's nice to share that with our listeners so that they remember that about themselves too. So I always ask everybody to share something kind of unexpected, their super secret superpower. So I'm going to go ahead and start with you, Madalena. What is your superpower?
I think something people wouldn't know about me is I actually sing. So I'm pretty good at singing. I sang all throughout high school and into college. So I could harmonize really well. I can read music. And I do all the time. It's just not in a formal setting anymore. But that's just something people don't normally know. And it's something I really love doing.
That is amazing. So it doesn't surprise me now, just knowing you. But I would not have known that. So that does surprise me. Very cool. How about you, AJ?
You know, I have never thought about this, to be quite honest. But in sitting here and some of the prior conversation, I would say that something that people don't know about me is I have the ability to communicate. I don't know, communicate is probably the wrong word, but let's just start this way. Every morning I go out on my deck and I feed the birds, and I have birds that actually land on my hand. They eat out of my hand. I have a crazy knack of being able to interact with animals, and not just birds, but any animal. And it's good for my soul, right? I mean, all the craziness that I've been involved in and all the things that I've gone through, it's just a great way to start my day, kind of being at peace and having a moment with nature. And not a lot of people would know that.
No. And I think anybody who has seen you in person, and a lot of our listeners will have seen pictures of all of us, like your stature, you know, just looking at you, you might not get that, but that is really cool to know.
My whole theory with that is people feel safe around him, and so do animals. So, I mean, he's not exaggerating. He can make friends with literally anything, and they gravitate to him.
That is wild. I'm sure there's some science or spirituality or something to that, or maybe all of those things. But thanks for playing. I appreciate it, guys.
You bet.
Well, we are going to talk today kind of broadly about the topic of keeping people safe, specifically students and also, you know, our communities. So our schools, our students, our communities, and each of you are part of that work in some very unique ways. I think it's probably helpful for everybody joining us here today to start off with some common ground. So when we talk broadly about what it means to keep people safe, where can we meet our listeners in a place that we all can begin this conversation at? What is a place that you guys would say we kind of all agree on? Like, what do we know about keeping people safe? What's the accepted common knowledge?
I would say from the angle of a survivor, I think every human person has an animalistic right to protect themselves and to be safe. And so I think that's common ground that's just like innate in human beings. We all have that right to be safe and to protect ourselves. And I think when you lean into that, that everybody wants to be safe. Everybody has that mm-hmm. desire for their loved ones to be safe. There's a lot of common ground that's established from that point.
I would agree with that. Absolutely. And I think it's interesting too, that you mentioned, you know, we have that kind of animalistic, it's built into us. It's built into our DNA. It's literally genetically coded for our survival. And yet sometimes I think in modern society, we almost train people away from that. You know, we almost train people away from those instincts. That's a truth that we have run into in the work that we've done with kids and teachers and school communities. What would you say, AJ, is kind of that place of common ground?
I would build off what Madalena says. With that desire, with that innate need for safety, if we could take it a step further, and I think most people would buy into this, that that is really all of our responsibility. We all have to play a role in this world of just in interacting with people to begin with. But when we talk about safety, it's all of our responsibility. And if we all step up and do our part, we can move mountains. We can do some really incredible things. When we travel and when I travel, I think that is one place that we can go very quickly that everyone agrees that, hey, we all own a part of this. Where we might differ is how much of that and where should we be, right? But yeah, just it's all of our responsibility.
I would agree with that. I would also say that that is something that has been challenging in the work that we've done at Safe and Sound is, and again, I think it goes back to living in civilization. And perhaps this is just one of those diseases of civilized society that people become passive and they become sometimes less apt to recognize that responsibility. They might recognize their right. I think all of us can say that we have a right to be safe and believe in that and agree on that. But I think it can be sometimes difficult to get folks to recognize that it is all of our responsibilities. And maybe we're all not equipped in the same way to contribute in the same way, but there is always something that everybody can do, from the smallest to the biggest, the most well-equipped person. So I think that's a fabulous place to kind of begin this conversation and start kind of poking a little bit at some of those myths and misperceptions about public safety in schools and in communities. So any other things that stand out for the two of you, either of you, in terms of myths and misperceptions? We kind of already touched on a couple, I think, there in looking at our common ground. But anything that you would like to sort of challenge us to be thinking a little bit differently about when it comes to safety?
One of the big things that we deal with, and it's kind of that lesson that's hard to learn, is people really think that it's not going to happen here. It's not going to happen in my community. It's not going to happen to my family. It's not going to happen to people that I know. And if we could chisel that away, if we could let people understand that the possibility is rare, I get that, but it can happen. And speaking from a man that's been in 3 school shootings and have his daughter survive an active shooting and my nephew survive one. These things happen. And if we could start there just to say, okay, look, the world's not a scary place. It's not terrible. It's not evil. There's evil in the world, but the world isn't evil. But let's just understand that these things can happen. I think we can move forward a little more productively.
I would say when it comes to a myth, sometimes people have this barrier to entry when it's talking about safety and taking ownership over personal safety, whether that's I don't want to participate in a drill because it's going to cause more harm than good. There's a lot of that narrative, or it's, well, I can't really protect myself because I'm not the 6'2" former SWAT officer, right? I think my unique perspective growing up was that I was taught from a very young age that my safety is my responsibility. And so that mindset really helped me build tools in the ways that were applicable for me from a very young age that ultimately helped save my life. But had I not had that perspective that it's not these big, massive ways that I'm protecting myself, it's little small things and mindsets that I build day in and day out that help keep me safe, there could have been a different outcome. And I am so grateful that I had that gift of that mindset and the ability to build small steps and tools along the way, because those are the things that actually matter. And that is approachable for every person, even if it doesn't, if the myth out there is that it has to be in big ways, so we keep ourselves safe.
you didn't have to have tactical hand-to-hand combat training, exactly. You know, to survive. You were able to think and breathe and pull from that chock full tool belt that you had been building all your life with your dad, with your mom, you know, through those life skills. And I think that is, that's a big difference maker for folks when they can realize that, you know what, there are things that I'm not powerless. Right. I am not powerless. In fact, I have an awful lot of power. I've heard too, AJ, a lot of our officers work with a lot of school resource officers, obviously. And a lot of them talk about the greatest tool I have, and they'll be as tall and in stature and well-equipped as you are. And they'll say, you know, the greatest thing that I have is my mind to help me work through a crisis, to help get somebody to safety, to help de-escalate a situation, to keep a community safe.
That's absolutely true, right? To have the right mindset, to understand how your brain is working under stress, and to create the neural pathways in the brain so that under stress, they can make those critical decisions. Because when you see these things break down, it's the failure to make decisions, right?
Yeah.
And so if we can prepare officers and they understand that their brain is by far their greatest tool, and then get into the biomechanics of how to deal with the situation. And science has gone leaps and bounds from when I started back in 1993 to where we're at now to understand how we react, how we perform under stress and in stress. We're really kind of at a cool spot when we talk about some of that.
Madalena, you talked about it being sort of there's a barrier to entry for a lot of people psychologically, I think. And when we often approach difficult topics like this logically and with science, you know, that can be another way that we have found that has been so helpful. Just understanding the neuroscience, understanding the way the body works and how it's all connected for so many of our folks is a game changer. I would say too, that even just thinking about, you know, what we're expecting of teachers, of students. And this is something that you can speak to directly, Madalena, because of what you do right now for a living and the experiences you've had serving your school community. You know, we're not, by asking people to prepare their minds and their bodies, asking anybody to put themselves in harm's way or any of those things. You want to talk about that?
Absolutely. So I had the great opportunity to serve as an emergency management specialist for Jeffco for 4 years before I got to step in my new role as a senior project manager for recovery and resiliency. And what I learned in doing drills, because that was a lot of what that role covered, was that when you approach people with the perspective that it's this big, scary, hard thing, their brain shuts down and they're not learning anyway. Versus when we approach drills from a perspective of this is a skill set, we are teaching our students and our staff, just like we're teaching our students math and science, it's something that's going to help them stay safe. It's going to help them build neural pathways and make decisions. There's so much more reception in that, and they're more effective. And what we're learning and what I've seen firsthand is that now kids are getting to the point where they're better at responding to scary things than adults are because they have those neural pathways. They were put in an environment from a young age where it was a normal thing, just like a fire drill. They learned those neural pathways. They learned what to do when bad things happen or when there was something strange happening at school. And from there, then they get to a point where it's just the norm and they are able to respond and react to something happening versus being in a position where, oh, I'm going into fight or flight and my brain is shutting down and I can't make decisions. And I think that's one of the greatest gifts we can give our students and our staff members, because it's not an extraordinary thing we're asking people to do, but practicing every year, making sure we're building those neural pathways and keeping them strong. My job is to make sure it doesn't happen when they're at school, but if it happens in the community, if it happens somewhere else, or if it does happen at school on that given day, they have those pathways already built so they're ready to go and they can react when that bad thing happens.
Let's talk about it too, because I think that's a big part of the conversation too, you know, in working in Colorado and in the general schools. And really any school community, it could be an act of violence, it could be a natural disaster, it could be an accident, it could be anything unsafe, you know? And so rather than burdening civilians and students with all the possible things that could go wrong in the world, keeping it simple and helping people just focus on their skill sets, as you call them, the tools in their tool belt. What can we do to be safe? You know, what are our options to be safe? And I love how you said, stay safe. That's the title of our resources at Safe and Sound, Stay Safe, and our program that we created to teach kids their choices and options, staying safe.
I think it's that mindset of one of my principals that I work with. Actually, I love this. And I told her I was going to ask her if I could use it. And she said, absolutely. But her staff, when they start having questions of what if, her response is always even if. So it's this idea of, yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty and there's a lot of what ifs that happen in the world. And there's bad things do happen and they can happen, right? But even if they do, this is the skill sets we have. This is how we're going to respond. We are capable. We are empowered to make good decisions. We're giving you these tools. So I love that shift of the unknown versus that even in the unknown, I'm ready to go. We know what to do.
That's exactly the shift, you know, and the tools in the tool belt are transferable. They are applicable to all of these situations, maybe in a different combination, maybe in a different sequence or order, but they're your tools. You know, we talk about with kids, your stay safe choices, they go with you wherever you go. So you might be learning about it here in your first grade classroom, but you will be able to take these. They belong to you. And wherever you go, the house of worship, the supermarket, the movie theater, the zoo, they're yours and they can help keep you safe. It's a pretty powerful shift.
Yeah, it really is.
So let's talk a little bit about those experiences, because there are so many unique things about this father-daughter duo. Let's start with you, AJ, you know, just talking about your journey through an amazing career and unfortunately through many life-changing and devastating tragic events that you were able to respond to and help others through.
Let's start here. I always knew that I wanted to serve, that I wanted to help people. And when you go back and you look at my childhood book, like kindergarten, what do you want to be when you grow up? It was, I always wanted to be a cop. I mean, all the way through, right? And I was fortunate enough that my mom kept that. And it's kind of funny and silly to go back and look at. And in 1993, I got the opportunity to serve and protect my hometown, which is one of the highest honors. I've been through a lot. And of course, not by choice, but by being the guy or the group, the individuals that were on point that day that got the call. And so did nothing special. Every officer in this country, right? And when I say that law enforcement is the most honorable profession on the face of the earth, I mean that from the bottom of my heart, because when they get the call, they go. And I got the call. And so we go back to, you know, to Columbine. And that really was the watershed moment when we look at my profession and looking at active shooters and what should the response be. We realized the response was wrong. It was a SWAT response. And that's why I was involved, because I was on the Jeffco Regional SWAT team at the time. And the journey started then. And I saw it devastate some of my teammates because of how bad that day was, because of the criticism, and it beat us all up. And when you're in that dark space, you have an option. You become cynical and angry and mean, and you point fingers and you make excuses, or you look yourself in the mirror and say, okay, this was bad. How can we do it better? And myself, as well as other individuals that were part of that team and other officers across the country, looked at that and said, hey, we need to find a way to do this better. With the understanding, in a perfect world, we wouldn't have to do this. With the understanding that it's going to happen and it's going to continue to happen. And so what is our role? What is our part to try and make these things better? And initially, it all started just with your tactics, right? What do we do? And we started training patrol officers to be able to get there sooner, to can't wait for SWAT and get inside and start to deal with these things. It's much bigger than that though, right? And so that's where we started. And then you start to look at this cultural thing. What can we do in the community? What options? How can we empower individuals? For me, being in those situations and seeing individuals that did not know they had options, to where now you have the opportunity to speak to people that go through it and they understood they had options and they were able to participate in their safety, be able to participate in what was taking place. Back at Columbine, we hadn't even thought that was a possibility, right? It was, you know, the cops are going to come and solve all these problems. And so you start to push out tactics. You start to look at this cultural thing. What can we do? And then it broadens. By the time Platte Canyon happened, we were much better prepared. We had officers that were able to get inside and calm these things down. And then by YWAM, we had emergency services involved where we had the opportunity to save lives faster. We had people that had the ability to kind of think these things through a little better. And then, of course, trying to stay positive to push this stuff out, you know, for me at least, it goes full circle, right? From being there kind of at the not at the beginning, because Columbine wasn't the first school shooting, but the one that we really analyzed in law enforcement to be able to push out all these other things, single officer response, rescue task force, evacuate, evade, defend, and then, you know, in 2018 to have my daughter survive because of all those things we put in place over the years where, you know, I'm just grateful that was able to find that light to keep pushing forward. Because like I said, a lot of my friends were devastated and became mean and callous and hated society and either left law enforcement or left the TAC team or, you know, it really messed with their lives. And for me, to be able to kind of keep moving forward and focus on what good can come from these things, it's kind of what kept me moving.
I can relate to that, although not in the same way. I just think that that mindset of, you know, we have to move forward. We owe it to those that we love. We owe it to our communities. We owe it to those that we've lost. You know, we have to find a way to move forward and move forward better. That's not to say that we can all move forward in the same way. You know, everybody has their own journey and maybe kind of stuck. That happens to all of us. So I don't want to paint a rosy picture, but that's something that has, I know, really helped on my journey forward, on my husband's, my surviving daughter's journeys as well, is just got to follow that light there. When you share your story, Madalena, you start at the way beginning. You start at like the toddler years. It really does provide the context for how you were building these skills all throughout your lifetime for such a time as this, when you had to pull out every single one of them and use all of your resources. So tell us a little bit about that journey.
With that context of his career that shaped my childhood, and I think when you look at the flip side of that coin, his experiences in response were the things that I started to learn about and understand how the world worked and in appropriate ways. My parents were really good about making sure that I wasn't exposed to that level of evil until I was old enough to deal with it, which I'm incredibly grateful for, because I could have gotten to the point where, oh, the world's a scary place. But instead, I was able to view his experiences from a lens of bad things happen, but Dad's Superman and there's good in the world. Even in the darkest space, there is light in that. And that's because I was able to see that from such a young age, that even in these horrible events, there was good. There was men and women who were willing to do something and were willing to take that step. And so I grew up with that perspective of, even in the worst case situation, there is, look for the helpers, right? There are people who are there who are willing to help. And there's something in each of us that is capable and more resilient than we'll ever know. With that perspective, knowing my safety was my responsibility, I grew up being the daughter of a cop and slowly learning what the realities of his career were throughout his different situations and the things he responded to. And as I got older, I started to kind of participate in some of the training and some of that next step that he was moving forward with in training our law enforcement officers. So I would go to our Frank D'Angelo Center for Community Safety back when the water wasn't on and there weren't any of the amenities and police officers would be going through the courses, and I'd bring my friends from my sports teams or my clubs in school, and we would run through the hallways when they were doing simunition drills so they had experience with children. I think that exposure, not only the mindset, but the exposure to people really making an impact and people who are willing to say there is evil in the world, but I'm going to step up and I'm going to do something to stop it, really left me with this empowered perspective. So as I went on and I went into roles in high school and college, I was really focused on serving as much as I could, because that was the experience I had around me. I got to grow up around all these incredible public safety forces of nature, and they really shaped what I wanted my life to be. I wanted it to be one of service. And then when I graduated college and I went off to Los Angeles to serve in a role, I survived the Borderline Barn Girl shooting. And all of those moments of exposure to what to do when bad things happen, all of those moments of, even in the darkest moment, you have a choice, you have agency. those things helped me make decisions and keep my head. I'm not going to even remotely pretend like my head was perfectly clear, because it wasn't, right? I'll be the first to tell you that I obviously had a fight or flight response, and I was very much so in a position where my body was experiencing what was happening. But those tools in your tool belt, like you were talking about, right? I was able to pull out all of those little gifts I'd been given throughout my childhood to be able to survive in that moment, whether it was as simple as, okay, he's going this direction, I'm going to go this direction, or I can't text right now to get help, so I'm going to start breathing to calm my heart rate down. Those things that started to take over in my brain so that I was able to make decisions and have some level of agency, even in the midst of horrific evil and in moments where it would have been very easy to feel helpless. Now, following that experience, I think the most impactful thing I was given as a gift in childhood was the example of resiliency, because those skill sets in that moment helped me survive. But had I had that experience and then it let it define the rest of my life and been in a position where I can't move forward and I can't help by helping others and I can't heal in that process, that one experience could have defined who I am and been the rest of my experience of my life. And so that biggest gift I've been given and the biggest gift I hope to give other people is that example of resiliency, because ultimately, if the target is the individual, if the individual can come out of horrible experiences, but be not only back to baseline in spite of it, but experience post-traumatic growth in spite of it, and be a force for good in their world in spite of it, and be able to face evil and, you know, look it in the eye and say, actually, you know what, even though I've looked you in the eye, I'm going to be a force for good, even with that exposure. I think that has been the greatest gift that I was given, was that example of resiliency. And that example of, even on a tangible level, seeking mental health support, having community around you, all of those protective factors that were modeled for me made it easier for me to face down that darkness and choose to be a light within it.
It's just so amazing. And it's so powerful that you share this so openly with others. So honestly, you know, you're not claiming that you were flawless and perfect. And
absolutely not.
And I think that that's so important for people to understand, that it is absolutely going to happen that in a moment where your life is being threatened, yes, you're going to lose fine motor control and you might start to hyperventilate. And even though you still have something you can work with. And I think that piece of your survival story is incredibly inspiring for civilians, right? You weren't armed. You were very, very vulnerable, as so many others were that night. But I think maybe even more remarkable is, after surviving that physically, you go on to choose to continue to survive every day. So you're not just a survivor of this thing that happened over the period of several hours. It's every day getting up and determining, I'm going to choose to be a survivor today. Yeah. I'm going to choose to heal through helping. I'm going to serve. Just in the short period of time that I've had the pleasure of knowing you, it's very inspiring. And it is setting the example for people, because without that example, you know, we don't have that to draw on when it's our day, you know. And I know when it was my day, I drew on those people like that who had a story and found that path forward. It's just, it's an amazing thing to share.
Thank you.
Turning the corner on our conversation a little bit, you talked about protective factors, and you and I've talked about that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, some of us come into that day with a heck of a tool belt, and some of the most valuable resources we have are those protective factors. And for you, strong family, you know, faith in your life, community, friends, you know, all of those things, they're like pillows that you're falling back on.
Absolutely.
You know, when you can't stand up yourself. So
yeah.
Taking stock, and just amazing to see the way your family supported you through this journey, and how your dad, AJ, how you were able to really apply, like Madalena says, kind of apples to oranges. Yeah. But the basic principles are the same. You were able to say, well, these are some coping skills I've had to learn the hard way.
Yeah.
And I too rely on mental health supports. You know, even I do as a chief, right? So just a lot of lessons to learn. Well, you guys, it is time to close the conversation. So this is the part of the conversation where we really hope to send forth our audience with something. You know, you talked about so many things, I think, to take away from this conversation, that it can be overwhelming. So, you know, one nugget, one pearl of wisdom, one call to action. What can anybody do that can make a difference in terms of keeping themselves safe, keeping their school and their community safe?
I can start with that. I think it would be a shame if you're listening to this conversation and thinking that, even just from my angle, that I am someone special, or that the reason I'm at where I'm at is because of some unique factors, when in reality, the protective factors that I had in place prior and the things that helped me afterwards are duplicatable. And so what I would say to the people listening is, please think about and take that initiative of, what are the things, what are the protective factors in your life that you can put in place prior to crisis? How can you become more resilient now before facing something else? Because that ultimately is that gift you can give yourself prior to something occurring that pays tenfold after the fact. And what are the ways you can support your community in becoming more resilient prior to crisis as well? Who can you help? What relationships can you build? What environments can you strengthen and serve? What examples can you learn about of resiliency and strength? What are some risks you can take to help yourself know what you're capable of? Those are all things that are proactive elements anyone listening to this can do to become more resilient prior to crisis occurring. And I would challenge anybody listening to this and tuning into this to really just take that to heart and think about small ways every day that you can become a little bit more resilient, because you can, and you're more resilient than you'll ever know.
AJ.
Well, when we talk about safety, when we talk about active shooting, school safety, all of that stuff, it's just such a heavy, scary thing. And sometimes we get stuck there. And I will tell you a message that I always gave to my daughters, and something that I try to say over and over and over again, is that this world is an amazing place. There's so many amazing, wonderful things that are going on. It's not a scary place. It's just unpredictable. And believe in how beautiful this world is and what we're doing and society and humanity and the amazing things that happen. Those bad moments, like Madalena said, we can prepare ourselves for that. We can just be realistic to say, hey, look, I need a safety plan. And it doesn't have to be anything crazy. The most dangerous thing anyone will ever do on a day-to-day basis is to get in their car and drive to the grocery store, drive to work, drive down the highway. And everyone has their own safety plan, right? They get in their car, they adjust their mirrors, they put their seatbelt on, and they try to stay in control of their life. They control what they can, and they go down the road. And that's this world of just safety in and of itself, is understanding things can happen. Instead of letting that bog us down and not allow us to go live our lives to our fullest, know that these things are there, and let's prepare for them. Let's do those small things. Whether it is build the community, the resiliency, the understanding that safety is my responsibility, and let's prepare and let's go live our lives to our fullest. And when the bad thing happens, we have a plan in place to be able to move forward, get past it, and then still go live a productive life.
Wow. That has been the Sound Off with Madalena and AJ DeAndrea. Thank you guys so much. I can't wait to just go back and listen to the whole thing all over again. We hope you enjoyed this powerful episode of The Sound Off with AJ and Madalena DeAndrea. Thank you to our season sponsor, the Door Security and Safety Foundation, for supporting this podcast. And thank you all for listening and supporting our mission. Remember, school safety is a collective responsibility, and together we can make a difference. Subscribe now to The Sound Off to stay informed and be part of the movement for safe and sound schools. Until next time, stay safe, everybody. Stay safe and sound.